Illinois Public Media. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Nearly 6 months after former Vice President Kamala Harris lost her race to then-former President Donald Trump, the Democratic Party is still figuring out what comes next, and more specifically, who comes next. Democratic governors have tried a variety of approaches. California's Gavin Newsom decided to compete with people in my field, starting his own podcast with early guests, including people pretty far to the right, like Charlie Kirk and Steve Bannon. Meanwhile, this week, Michigan's Gretchen Whitmer shared the stage with President Trump during a rally commemorating his first 100 days. Then there is our governor, J.B. Pritzker. For years, he's been making appearances at Democratic Party events across the country. He's been the subject of many interviews on cable news and podcasts and the Sunday morning political shows. And he played the role of host during last year's Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Then, this weekend, he spoke at a party fundraiser for Democrats in New Hampshire.
Listen, I understand the tendency to give in to despair right now, but despair is an indulgence that we cannot afford in the times upon which history turns. Never before in my life have I called for mass protests, for mobilization, for disruption, but I am now.
All this raises the question about what is next for Governor Pritzker. Will he run for a third term? Is he preparing for a presidential campaign? And how does he fit into the landscape of ambitious Democrats who sense an opportunity in 2028? With me to talk about all of that are two national political reporters who've recently covered Pritzker in this context. John McCormick is with the Wall Street Journal. He's covered presidential campaigns going back to 2000, and in the past he worked for the Chicago Tribune. John, welcome to the 21st Show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And David Weigel is national politics reporter at the globally minded news startup Semaphore. He was in New Hampshire for Pritzker's speech. Dave, welcome to you as well.
Very good to be here. Thank you.
And listeners, you can join the conversation today by calling 800-222-9455. We're on this topic for the first half of our show today. What do you think about this? Do you think Pritzker would make a good presidential candidate? What sets him apart from other Democrats who've been talked about for 2028? Let us know what you think. 800-222-9455. All right, John McCormick, I'm going to start with you. Variations on this discussion have been going on for years. Even back in Pritzker's first term, we had conversations on our program about the idea of him aiming for higher office. So talk about what's happened since then to raise his profile.
Well, I think, there's a few important things to keep in mind about Pritzker in terms of what makes him unique. And I think the number one thing is money. He is a billionaire. He's somebody who could afford to self-finance a presidential campaign. He's done so in his Illinois gubernatorial campaigns, spending, in excess of $300 million of his own fortune on getting elected twice. So I think that's a really important thing to keep in mind with him. I think to answer one of the questions you posed in the setup, is he going to run again for governor? I think the answer to that is almost certainly yes. But he could very quickly after that start to pivot more towards a presidential bid. There's going to be a lot of prospective candidates visiting places like New Hampshire and South Carolina between now and the 2026 midterms. But things will really get more serious then after the 2026 midterms as we head into 2027. And so that's probably when we'll see Pritzker and other, potential candidates getting more serious about this.
Dave, for our listeners who don't, tune in every Sunday and are not perpetually online, I thought New Hampshire was the Democrats were trying to break the back of the New Hampshire status in the primaries. What's going on there? Talk about its significance in this.
Oh, that's a good part of this, because Democrats in New Hampshire, I talked to party chairman Ray Buckley, they definitely saw what Pritzker was doing as an endorsement of New Hampshire having the first primary in 2028. And not to get too into the weeds, but New Hampshire law requires they have the first primary. If people skip it, as Democrats did last time, they just say well, we're going to count our delegates anyway, and they win a fight at the DNC to get them counted. So there will be a messy fight at some point after this conversation among Democrats about if they reorder the calendar. Will South Carolina go first technically again? Right now, it's on the books. It might not in the future because that was a Biden rule. But Pritzker treated this like a campaign event for somebody who's not running for president. He was very accessible to reporters before the event. He obviously is not talking about when he would make an announcement, but he acted the way a potential presidential candidate would act. It was not being cute and going on some podcast, no offense to podcasts. It was showing up where people are expected to vet their presidential candidates and making himself accessible.
But we're still on broadcast, so I don't take that personally. Does any of what he's doing make sense, Dave, if a presidential run doesn't happen?
Not really. So Pritzker has for years been contributing money to Democrats around the country. I talked to him in New Hampshire about his investment in Wisconsin, because actually in Wisconsin, where the Supreme Court race went heavily for Democrats, bigger than polling expected, he had donated to the Democratic campaign there this year, and Republicans attacked it. The Republicans actually said, well, Democrats are attacking us for getting money from Elon, but they have their own fat cat, J.B. Pritzker. And he had an answer for that. He sort of raised one hand an inch off the ground, the other hand about a foot off the ground or off the table to demonstrate how much money he spent versus Elon. But he is somebody who Democrats see as a funder for electoral causes around the country. That will keep up. And everybody now, I would say now, but let's say there's a world where Harris might have won the presidency. They didn't see that as him angling for a national role or becoming the nominee. They do now. And that is a open question. If he does run for president, John was kind of pointing to this, would he spend the money that he spent in these races in Illinois? I think it's $350 million between his campaigns and the unsuccessful campaign for the progressive fair tax. That will be an awkward conversation among Democrats. At the moment, they do talk to him and say, how can you help us out? And he helps out. And he has been making friends with Democrats around the country, especially in key states, by providing the money he can provide without a real cost to him. He's worth more than $3 billion. It might fluctuate depending on what happens with his investments. But he has more money than any actual Democratic donor who is active right now.
John, you're the headline on your piece called him the second wealthiest politician in America. Maybe you can explain that.
Yeah, so there was a point in 2024 where Pritzker actually was the wealthiest current elected politician in America. Trump has benefited from the presidency since then, and his valuation, at least by Forbes, is now in excess of J.B. Pritzker's estimated net worth. And so
is this
Trump
mostly
is actually,
that meme coin, the Trump coin?
Yeah, crypto has been very good to him, and as well as his stock valuations in Truth Social, his social media platform. So the presidency has been good for the president's net worth, and now he exceeds Pritzker. Just to amplify something Dave said, which I think is also really important here, why Pritzker is different from some of these other potential 2028 Democrats, is he has really built out this network of friends across the country, because he's given so much money to political parties, candidates, and besides the political giving, he and his wife have a huge foundation that donates roughly $50 million a year to various charities and causes across the country. A lot of it obviously is in Illinois and Chicago. There's tons of schools and hospitals and things with the Pritzker name on it, but their giving is really nationwide when it comes to philanthropy. And so, he has friends in lots and lots of places through both the political giving and the charitable giving. And that's a helpful thing. Now, in terms of the, self-funding that both Dave and I have talked about, I think everybody would anticipate that he would do some of that. He obviously would need to raise some money online to prove that he has a credible base. But he's also different from actually somebody that Dave and I once indirectly worked for, Mike Bloomberg. Both of us, both worked for Bloomberg once upon a time at the same time, actually. And Bloomberg spent about $1 billion of his fortune in the 2020 Democratic primary race. And, you know, he spent that amount of money in, I think it was like less than 4 months, and he was in and out. JB has better sort of retail politician skills than Bloomberg. Bloomberg, of course, had been the mayor of New York and, you know, knew his way around politics and big city politics. But he was not a natural on the campaign trail or on the debate stage. And Pritzker, you know, does have some, you know, legitimate sort of people skills. He's pretty good with people.
Let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. Thomas is calling from Springfield, Illinois, on line one. Thomas, thanks for calling in.
Sure. Thank you for allowing me to weigh in on this topic, which I've been telling my friends and everyone since Kamala Harris's loss that I think that Pritzker might be an appropriate candidate if he does two essential things. I think the environment right now is pretty much kind of angry at the particularly wealthy, the super wealthy, the billionaire class. And if he took an approach like Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Theodore Roosevelt, who were considered to be class traitors, to come out strongly against the billionaires, require them to pay their fair share of taxes, I think that would go a long way with regards to a populist movement being in favor of his campaign. And beyond that, he could still, as you mentioned just previously about raising money, he can raise money. I think he should raise money. I think he should have a PAC. But then the money that he raises from that PAC, he should announce that he's going to use that to support down ballot candidates throughout the country, or at least the state, with regards to the Democratic Party. And I think he would gain a lot of support and a lot of regular people. He would overcome that billionaire bad label, I guess. It's hard to be a bad label if you're a billionaire. But I think those two components would work particularly well for him, and I think he would end up with a victory, really.
Yeah,
and,
right.
He has the bona fides already as a candidate, you know, as a Democratic candidate, and the experience that's necessary. So I'll leave it at that.
All right. Thanks so much, Thomas. I appreciate you sharing your perspective today. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. We're talking about Governor J.B. Pritzker's potential national political ambitions with Dave Weigel of Semaphore and John McCormick of The Wall Street Journal, both national political reporters who've written about this recently. We got some text messages from our listeners on this, too. Aaron in Springfield just said simply, he's a billionaire. Charles in Champaign said another crooked billionaire politician. Dave, I know you talked to Pritzker about this idea that he is part of the oligarchy. How did he respond to that?
Yeah, I asked him. When Bernie Sanders is talking about an oligarchy, is he talking about you? And I wasn't trying to be cute. I think that is a question that other people will be asking him as he campaigns around the country, but especially if he runs. And his answer was that when people talk about an oligarchy, he thinks they're saying that powerful people in a society trying to impose their will on everybody else and make them pay for what the oligarchs are unwilling to pay for. It was the way he put it, that this is kind of rent seeking, to use a poli-sci term. This is rich people who take over the government and direct benefits themselves away from the average person. Whereas he is a progressive who wants to pass a progressive income tax and redistribute wealth, build more stuff that people use. That was how he separated it. I wouldn't say it was a bad answer, but it's the kind of thing that I heard it and I said, that should probably be tight enough for 30 seconds in a debate, because he might get hit. Sanders is not going to run. But there is, and you heard it from those remarks you got from people, there is a queasiness about nominating a billionaire. And the stories that Pritzker survived when he won the governor's race, like buying the house next door and letting it degrade to save money on it, there are rich guy stories that I think he will have to answer for. It's not that the party base will never vote for a wealthy person, but needs to be convinced that it's not going to be a Trump situation where he's queasy about giving about taxing the rich. And this was before he ran for governor. There's a clip of him when he was just a very wealthy guy who supported Barack Obama, criticizing the way Obama talked about wealth. That is one that if I was running, if I'm a Democrat running against Pritzker in a couple of years, I'd probably take that clip and throw it at him.
You're reminding me of all the greatest hits from those campaigns. The toilets, yeah. Specifically, he
yeah,
had
Chris
toilets.
Kennedy's campaign, basically. Yeah, yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. The toilets removed from the mansion next door that he bought. His bank accounts in the Cayman Islands, all that sort of thing. John, do you want to say anything about? We need to take a break in another minute. So, any final words on this point, and then we'll take a break and come back and keep going.
Yeah, no, I thought your caller made a very important point, and Dave answered it very effectively, that it would be something he would absolutely have to address. And there's, the progressive base of the Democratic Party does not exactly love billionaires. And so, Pritzker is rich. He's also been a former venture capitalist, been businessman, and, flies on a private jet. Although when he does fly in the private jet, he pays for it himself and pays for the carbon credit offset. So you can tell that he's got at least a little bit of sensitivity to the wealth and has sort of navigated that topic for his entire political career.
Yeah, maybe if AOC, Congresswoman AOC, ends up in a debate with him, she can wear her tax the rich dress from the Met Gala a few years ago. All right, we are going to continue our conversation about Governor J.B. Pritzker's national political ambitions. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. That's 800-222-9455. We're talking with John McCormick of The Wall Street Journal and Dave Weigel of Semaphore on this topic for just a little less than 10 minutes now, so don't wait. 800-222-9455. More to come. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and today we are talking about the ambitions of the governor of the 21st state, J.B. Pritzker, and whether he is gearing up to campaign for president. He gave a big speech in New Hampshire last weekend where he called for protests and disruption against Republicans. They shouldn't know peace, he said. Quote, he did add, I should say, quote, we must castigate them on the soapbox and then punish them at the ballot box. This, however, did gin up a lot of sort of umbrage from people, including Stephen Miller, the White House Deputy Chief of Staff for Policy. Let's listen to what he had to say.
His comments, if nothing else, clearly can be construed as inciting violence. This war that Democrat governors and mayors are waging against federal law enforcement, I mean, this is nullificationist behavior. This is secessionist behavior.
All right, I'm going to let listeners make up their own minds about the context of that. We did get a text, though, from a listener, Martin, who said, in all caps, waiting for Pritzker to be arrested for inciting violence. We're talking about this with John McCormick of The Wall Street Journal and Dave Weigel of Semaphore, both of whom have written about Pritzker's national ambitions recently. Dave, I know you followed up on Stephen Miller's comments about Governor Pritzker. What's going on there?
Yeah, I wouldn't say Pritzker was courting that when he said it. All of us in the room knew that basically his lines about how some do-nothing Democrats had failed the country and his lines about resisting Trump, calling him authoritarian, those were probably the headlines. But this was ideal for him because he got Miller, he got the Illinois Republicans to say, and have said this ever since Butler, the assassination attempt on Trump last year, they've tried to cast that sort of rhetoric about Trump as incitements for violence. In this case, they cut off part of Pritzker's remark that he said, we're going to stand up on the soapbox and beat them at the ballot box. So he got this extra news cycle. The next day he went to UIC with college administrators there, got a question. And I wouldn't say it was a softball question, but it was the topic he wanted to talk about. No, he was not going to, in his answer, he said, I'm not going to take a lecture on this from people who pardoned January 6th rioters. He's very comfortable with that sort of discourse. And other Democrats have dealt with it because this again, is a common Republican tactic. If you are calling for people to resist us, are you calling for an insurrection? Are you calling for violence? Are you threatening violence? Democrats don't take that very seriously, but not all of them respond to it effectively.
There's something else we need to talk about because we did get a few text messages about this. And, we are in a visual age. We are long past the era of the Lincoln-Douglas debates. John, maybe I'll direct this to you. We got a couple of pretty nasty text messages about Governor Pritzker's appearance, about his weight. I wonder if, you know, does anyone talking about this? Are there people who are thinking through, like, boy, he is a large man. You know, that is a realm in which in America it's still kind of okay to mock people in ways where, you know, there's a lot of other areas where we've kind of excised that from our national discourse to some extent.
I was waiting for this to come up in our conversation because I think it is like his billionaire status. It is something that's out there. He's going to have to address it if he moves forward. When I wrote a story recently about, ahead of his trip to New Hampshire, I would say the number one email topic I got in response from people was he's too fat to be president. And people were very blunt and sometimes mean about that in their emails that they sent me. But yeah, no, it's a legitimate issue. I think if we see JB, losing some pounds between now and 2026, 2027, that'll be additional fodder for, you know, the belief that he's probably going to run for president. But it is something that's out there. Now, when I wrote my story, I mentioned his weight in the first paragraph. But I also looked up Trump's weight, and according to his most recent, you know, physical, I think it's something like 224 pounds. He's 6'3". And if you go to the National Institute of Health guidelines for where obesity is, Trump is basically kind of like one tick below the level where he would be, you know, rated as obese by the National Institute of Health. And so he's not a slim man. It hasn't hurt him. Trump does not have a healthy lifestyle or diet. So maybe there is a place, where that can work for Pritzker. It's something that he's aware of. In his very first campaign for governor, his very first television ad talked about, something like "Let's go big," and it was a double entendre.
It was part of the lyrics of the entrance song in New Hampshire. Think big.
Yeah, that too. It's something that he kind of makes a joke about himself, and that can be effective. And so, you know, how much of a detriment it would be, you know, remains to be seen. But it's definitely something that's at the top of mind of many readers and viewers.
Dave, I also want to ask you about another thing we heard about from some listeners, which is his Jewishness. He is not the first Jewish governor of Illinois, but he would be the first Jewish president. I mean, that, and it cuts both ways, right? Because he is a pretty strong, he's spoken out in favor of Israel. And we've seen this year that there's still a lot of anti-Semitism floating out there in America. Is this something that people are talking about as well?
They're talking about it, and Pritzker's talking about it. This is one of the big applause lines in his speech. And actually, they sent their prepared remarks, and they marked. They knew this would get applause. Stop tearing down the Constitution in the name of my ancestors. Do not claim that your authoritarian power grabs are about combating anti-Semitism. Just quoting from his speech. So he has leaned into that. And do Democrats want another fight about Gaza in the next primary? They don't. But they were sensitive to the one idea that Kamala Harris did not pick Josh Shapiro's running mate because she was so worried about those protesters. And they are sensitive to anti-Semitism. One question I asked Pritzker is what he thought of House Republicans investigating the Pritzker Law School, which he went to and then later renamed with his money, because they argue that by defending Gaza protesters, it was engaging in anti-Semitism. And he rejected that. And that is something a lot of Democrats want to hear. Is it what they want to hear every single day, all the time? No. They do want a candidate who is adroit enough to respond to that, because that is an ongoing theme of this administration, that they are acting to protect Israel and fight anti-Semitism. That was a big moment for him in the room, that he said, no, I'm Jewish. Don't tell me about that. You can't tell me that you need to kick a college student out of the country because he wrote an op-ed in the name of Judaism. I'm Jewish. You don't get to do that.
Last thing I want to ask you about, and I know we're short on time, but The governor has Governor Pritzker has taken a pretty combative approach to the administration. I contrasted that with Governor Whitmer in Michigan, who, you know, showed up in the White House, never mind holding the file folder in front of her face when the cameras came in. Gavin Newsom, who is having pretty friendly and understanding conversations with some people pretty far on the right wing and anathema to progressive voters. John, can you just talk about the governor's approach and how the Democrats are responding to that?
Yeah, I mean, he's being more you know, among the most combative and critical of Trump in, you know, this group of governors that are, you know, being watched as prospective 2028 candidates. And I just think it comes back to money. I hate to keep obsessing on money, but money is important. And his ability to self-fund, the fact that he's never had to really worry about fundraising, has allowed him to be more independent, to be more outspoken, to say what's on his mind and not worry quite as much about offending, you know, one group of donors or whatnot. And so, you know, I think we saw that during COVID when he was governor. He was, you know, very outspoken and sort of willing to, you know, go his own path on it. And so I do think, you know, being wealthy just allows you to say what's on your mind and worry a little bit less about the consequences. That's easier to do as a governor in a Democratic state than it is running as a national candidate. So, you know, he'll obviously get tested on that if he goes forward.
Dave, last question, just is about the reception that he got among these sort of, I guess they're not everyday people, the people, kind of people who go to a kind of fundraiser in New Hampshire. But, you know, these are the core people that you need to win the invisible primary, as it's called, right? What did people think of his speech?
He got a couple standing ovations. On the way in, I did hear, when I asked people what they knew about him, that he had fought Trump, and they mentioned his him saying we don't have kings in America in his budget speech. They'd heard about that, and they knew he was a billionaire, and they had some concerns about that. So he did very well in the room. I think he moved some people. He spent some face time with all the Democratic electeds in New Hampshire, who I wouldn't say expect him to give them money, but it wouldn't hurt. No, it was a successful appearance. And I was saying there are a lot of Democrats going on other podcasts, other shows, trying to find ways to get into the discourse, coming to D.C. to give a speech, which he's also done. But the fact that he came to New Hampshire and planted the flag, that actually will be potent in that primary. There are some hard feelings about how Biden went out of his way to reduce the state's role in the process. Very helpful to Pritzker. It will be remembered, I think, by some people in that room that he came early on and gave a punchy speech when a lot of Democrats were figuring out how they opposed Trump.
Dave Weigel of Semaphore, John McCormick of The Wall Street Journal, thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us today on The 21st Show.
Thank you.